for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back for another hour or so of mirth, merriment and wonder about the world of non-league football. All alone in the studio this week with my usual co-host off doing a recce for the weekend. But a packed show nonetheless with another big weekend for non-league football ahead. So let's get things underway. So a busy week, I'm sure, at Non-League Paper Tower. So let's head on over there and speak to editor Alex Neary. Alex, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. It has been a busy week for you.
Yeah, it has. It's been our annual National Game Awards at Chelsea, Stamford Bridge. Pretty full-on day where we have about 110 guests and obviously a stack of winners, 16 awards to give out, ranging from Player of the Year, Manager of the Year, Team of the Year, down to kind of the more the grassroots kind of awards, the Fan of the Year, the Unsung Hero of the Year, Community Club of the Year. So, yeah, there's a real plethora of awards there. A really good day at Stamford Bridge. Always pretty stressful, but we get there in the end and we have a good beer afterwards as well.
There was a very good beer or two or maybe a few more. Excellent host, I felt, on the day at Stamford Bridge, Mr. Alex Neary. Done very well, despite the cold.
Yeah, I've been nursing a cold for I don't know how long now, but I think it's my age. I just can't shake it off.
I think so, I'm putting it down to that. It's a bit like you if you just before you're going on holiday, you always get that sort of slight sniffles, and then once you've down tools, you sort of your body gives up and sort of overtakes. And I think you probably had such a busy season, you're sort of maybe slightly on the wind down that it's caught up with you. But let's talk about some of those National Game Awards. One notable sort of bit of news this week, that obviously you've been looking at Gateshead, and there's more to look at Gateshead as well today, I believe, as to change of directors at Companies House and things like that. But John Mellish picking up an award, and then Scarperin, really. But good luck to the boy.
Yeah, good luck to him. And just quickly on Gateshead, I'll be completely honest with you. I don't actually, I sort of tune back into the news on Gateshead on a Friday every week because so much happens from Friday to Friday in between. I kind of just catch up with it then. But I'm, of course, aware about John Mellish's move to Carlisle yesterday, not even 24 hours after he stood at the front of the award ceremony and picked up the award for Young Player of the Year. I did actually kind of try and get some information out of him because I know there've been quite a bit of interest in him. I know Hartlepool were interested in him too. So a great move, a real top talent, and for a young lad to have the season he's had, marshalling that Gateshead defence with all the rubbish that's been going on off the pitch, it tells you a lot about his character, and that's what scouts are looking for these days. They want to know if somebody's game ready. They want to know if somebody's got the right head on their shoulders. And I think John Mellish certainly has. Good luck to him.
Yeah, and some of those other awards at the National Game Awards. You mentioned the Unsung Hero Award. Now, a majority of those award winners collected, and you had a few words with them. But I like the fact that the Unsung Hero Award went unsung even by himself.
Yeah, very much so, under the radar. I think it's nerve-wracking standing up there and talking to people, even when you're just receiving an award. It's something that people aren't particularly used to. And I think he just wanted to, like I say, fly under the radar, and good luck to him. But that was Lee Page from St Albans, does a fantastic job there. All credit to him. But that's kind of really what the awards are about for us. Yes, of course, the big story of the day was Leighton Orient and the fact that they won three awards. But 2 years ago, I think Lincoln won eight. So, those bigger clubs will kind of steal the headlines. But there's a lot to be said about those unsung heroes and the fans of the years and people like that.
Yeah, and the Unsung Hero Award is always someone that virtually lives at the club And we know that there's, you know, probably hundreds of unsung heroes that are still awaiting their awards up and down the country. But we'll sing their praises if they want to get in touch on the Non-League Football Show, and I'm sure with the Non-League paper. But we're always happy to tell their story and just try and encourage some other people to get involved in the game.
Well, exactly. You know, the Non-League is built on off the work on the, off the, you know, from the work of volunteers. So and without volunteers, so many clubs would cease to exist. So congratulations to Lee, a fantastic award for him to win, and we welcome more volunteers coming forward and more volunteers putting their hat in the ring.
And obviously, you know, the more volunteers you can get behind your club, the more successful your club can be. And celebrating after the weekend, I'm sure some of them probably still celebrating now, we had some big playoff winners, obviously, over last weekend. The big one, notably, Salford going up into the non-league game into the Football League. I think on the day, I wasn't able to be there, but from all accounts, they were deserving winners on the day.
Well, they were deserving winners, but I have to say it was not a good game of football. It was pretty, really tough to sit there and watch that as a neutral. Listen, I will do my very, very best in my role as editor of the Non-League paper to really put non-league football in the strongest possible light, and we gave the game absolute coverage that it deserved. It's a fantastic game itself, but the game was kind of just riddled with nerves, if I'm honest with you. It's so much riding on that game, and I always just feel, Tim, that Wembley Stadium, we knew the crowd was going to be relatively disappointing on Saturday to what you would call kind of manufactured football clubs, really just kind of finding their way in their short modern history. They don't have the huge fan base. They are growing, so we did expect it to be quite a low crowd. But I just think Wembley Stadium, 8,000 people there. It's just this huge massive area. The pitch is bigger than the normal pitches they would play on. I just think the players kind of lose their bearings a little bit, and it almost turns into a bit of they just become a bit awestruck. If I'm
honest, and from a non-league fan's point of view, I've certainly taken some stick, because then the national media gets hold of the pictures and all you see are empty seats at Wembley as well. And there's that argument, mm-hmm. Was Wembley the right venue? But as we said before, I've certainly said this week to other people, it could have easily have been Leyton Orient against Wrexham. And
a week
before, or 2 weeks before, it could have been there. And then what other venue could there have been other than Wembley? So, but it doesn't look good for non-league football when you're trying to entice people in. I get that.
No, it doesn't. And listen, in many ways, you applaud the National League and the FA for hosting it at Wembley. But it just so happened that in terms of fans coming through the gate, it was the one final out of that top seven that was probably going to be the lowest. I suppose you could probably say Solihull Moors as well. But I suppose the flip side of that is it's all credit to these football clubs trying to grow something from its embryonic stages. AFC Fylde will come again next year. They're well backed. They're well financed. Salford City will just progress. This is just one step for them going forward. I actually think that Leyton Orient will progress, but at a slightly different tempo. And they will just progress almost like a Lincoln City have done over the last couple of years. They've obviously won promotion to League One this season. So I think both clubs that have gone into the Football League are very, very well equipped and well backed, and they will both got good managers there who know what's in front of them. So good luck to both of those clubs. In League One, I think they'll be tussling at the top of the table.
And I think what's nice is that the people that we've spoken with at both of those clubs over the years and developed relationships with, I think they're going to stay in contact with non-league football as well. And some people say, well, they'll be stealing the stars out of non-league and taking them into the Football League. But that's what we want, isn't it? We want that link between the professional game and how semi-professional was as it used to be known as.
Well, exactly. I had this conversation actually with Justin Edinburgh on Tuesday at the awards, and a number of other award winners and players. That is it really non-league football these days? Because they just, some people just see it as a couple of divisions lower. There's this kind of dividing line between the Football League and non-league. It doesn't really exist anymore, to be honest with you. There is a stigma attached. Obviously, the fans, dropping out of the Football League into non-league is not something they want to happen to their club, and not something they want to be associated with. But they want to get back into the Football League. Who doesn't? Everybody wants to climb in the right direction. But I think there's definitely a stronger relationship now between, you know, League One and League Two and the National League, and that kind of drops down into Step Two. Players themselves know whether you're playing for a League One or a League Two side. The goal scorer of the season, Fabien Robert, who came out and had a couple of beers with us afterwards, was great fun, great value. There's a guy who's about a contract this summer. He's out of contract. He's been playing at Forest Green Rovers, but he's been on loan at Gloucester City playing Step Two football. And he was telling me afterwards he's had a fantastic time. The passion for the game, even down at that level, it just blows him away. So there's a lot to be proud of for non-league football. We put on a decent show, and I think more people are starting to wake up to that.
Yeah, but talking about the strength in the National League, the two sides that went up from the Step 2 playoffs, Chorley getting through the playoffs this time round. How close was that one? And Woking making it through as well after leading the National South for so much of the season.
Yeah, I'm really pleased for Woking. I'm really pleased for both clubs, to be honest with you. I think it's a bit of a fillip, really, for the National League, for the playoff structure in its second year. I thought it was a success last year. I'm a big fan of the top seven going playoffs. I think it tightens up the league. I think it stops teams kind of just drifting along in mid-table. There are a lot less dead rubbers. So I'm a big fan of that. And I think this season, in steps one and steps two, the best teams that didn't go up as champions have gone up as playoff winners. So Woking have gone up in National South. They've been there all through the season. They tailed off at the end a little bit. I think the disappointment of knowing that they weren't going up automatically knocked them off track a little bit. But they regrouped and regathered and fought their way through the playoffs of having two home ties. That's a massive help. Likewise, Chorley, they were top of the tree for so long and just stumbled at the final couple of hurdles, giving up the title to Stockport. So congratulations to Chorley and Woking and Salford too. I know they finished third in the National League, but they were the main challengers to Leighton Orient. You ask Leighton Orient who they were looking over their shoulder at and whose fixtures they were running their thumbs down throughout the season, it was Salford's. Full respect to Solihull Moors, who finished second, but I really do think Salford were the second best team in that division. So everybody should be relatively happy.
Relatively happy. I mean, one man that wasn't happy last week when we spoke to him on the show was Steve McKim at the Tunbridge Angels. He was much happier after the Super Playoff final that his side won, and then the other Super Playoff won by Kings Lynn. And I know it was a one-off, there were lots of criticisms about it, but in the end, it looks like those that were there had a good day out.
Yeah. My heart goes out to Met Police and Warrington. Quite bizarre that the two home sides lost, not only lost, but lost an extra time to the same score. So, the Super Playoffs were never going to be easy to swallow, particularly for the teams that had to go there and particularly for the two teams that lost. So it's not ideal. It's not going to be a thing for the future. They won't be around for long. Everybody will be grateful for that. The points per game playoffs as well, they were an absolute nonsense, quite frankly. And thankfully, they won't be happening for much longer either. So it is what it is. They were brought in this year as a kind of streamlining process as they're moving forward towards this pure pyramid in 2020. But it was a thankless task, really, for any club having to arrive at a playoff final knowing they had no chance of going up, as some of the guys at Step 4 did. That's not a situation that we want to get into. It questions football's integrity. And the Super Playoffs is step three. It was just, when do you celebrate? You've won what you think is your divisional playoff, and you've now got to go and play a team you know nothing about as well. I think that's the...
There just wasn't enough time to prepare, I don't think, either.
Yeah.
And also, people have to remember that a lot of non-league clubs, if you have got contract players, or even if they're non-contract players, they normally expect by the first week of May, they can go off on holiday. They can, you know, they've got other plans. And then you're extending the season, and it creates all sorts of complications.
Yeah, we spoke to Julian Dix last week, the Heybridge manager, who his team fell foul of the points per game rule. They thought they were up, and then they weren't. Now, the FA and the governing body will say, well, you knew about this last year. And they did, to be fair. Mm. They did. But I just felt, I wrote in the paper last year that it was the wrong decision to do. They should scrap the playoffs at step four this year and just do it on points per game. So if you finish where you finish in a league and you've got a better points per game average than somebody else, you go up. You don't need to be fighting your way through playoffs to see who goes up. It's the same. It's the result's going to be the same. So everybody knew the rules a year ago, but they were the wrong rules, in my opinion. But the FA are looking at allocations now, and they're going to be released in Sunday's paper for us. And I'm not here to kind of put the knife into the guys at the FA. I do stand firm and believe that they do a pretty good job, and they care about non-league football. And there's always going to be some clubs that are unhappy, and there'll be clubs on Sunday, I'm sure, with the allocations. There'll be some clubs that are unhappy, but it's a minefield trying to protect everyone's interest in non-league football. So we'll see what happens. Like I say, allocations released in Sunday's paper, so everybody can start planning the season next season. But I'm sure there'll be some people who won't be happy.
I've heard that. It's indeed the football authorities. It's a bit like being a referee, isn't it? None of us really would want to step in and wear that black jersey and take that abuse. But you know, we know the game would be lost without them. We know that actually the they're doing it for the right reasons. They're not doing it trying to irritate everybody. You mentioned the allocations, and the problem is, it doesn't matter how hard people have worked, and you know we've got all these playoffs. That despite the issues that there were with the Southern League, and you know that being slightly delayed, they are all finished, and we do know the clubs that are in those spots. It's just other things beyond everybody's contemplation or, you know, ability to do anything about. So there's even, I guess, issues in the Football League with different clubs. We've then got clubs maybe in the National League. And so I guess the allocations are not necessarily draft, but they do need to be approved by AGMs, which are coming up. I think National League is the follow or 2 weekends time after the release, isn't it? And then the other, certainly Southern League and Isthmian League, I think on the 16th or that weekend of. Speaking to managers like Jamie Vermiglio up at Chorley, they've won their playoff now, but they're already behind on bringing players in. And this is the difficulty for clubs, isn't it? Until those allocations are set in stone, you can't plan your squads, or even pre-season friendlies are difficult because you don't want to be playing against a club that's going to come up against in the league next season.
Yeah, but like I say, it's a minefield. The lower league pyramid, and it's difficult to please everybody. The late finish to the season, it seems to be getting later and later, gradually and gradually. So, look, it's not ideal, and there will be some people that come Sunday who won't be happy, but we will have to see. I mean, the allocations are what they are, and you look at some of the teams that have come down from the National League this season, it's very, very, it's weighted with seven teams. Mm-hmm. So we're wondering what's going to go on there. You just don't know what's going to happen at Gateshead, unfortunately. There will be appeals, there'll be AGMs. This is just the start of it, I'm afraid. So what will be, will be. But the first road to overcoming all this chaos will be revealed on Sunday.
So Sunday, a massive day for non-league football. So obviously everybody has got to go out first thing Sunday morning. They'll be wanting to be at the newsagents when they open now Sunday morning to get these allocations. But also a preview of National Finals Day, FA Vars, FA Trophy.
Yeah, it's a great day. Really enjoyed last year, particularly the trophy final between Brackley and Bromley. I think the trophy final this time round could be really good. I mean, I know Fylde were disappointing last week at Wembley in the playoff final, but I think there was so much on that game, and that really, the promotion final is what everybody wants to get through. So I'm hopefully that Dave Chalmers' men will turn up on Sunday and be a bit more free-spirited and go for it. I'm pretty sure Leighton Orient will. Leighton Orient have got what they wanted. They've got the prize that they wanted, and they're heading back into the Football League. And congratulations to them. I think it'll be a really high quality final there. But I, you know, don't rule out the Vars final too between Chertsey and Clay Paper Mills. It's going to be a great day. I think the crowd is moving north of 40,000 collective. So I think that's heading towards the highest crowd for the finals day since it started a few years back. So will be a great day. We'll all be there en masse. And then it's feet up time for the summer.
Time for the summer when we all get very, very busy again, because there'll be some other stories to report. But looking ahead to Sunday then, Alex, we've got the allocations, the previews. Anything else we can expect to read in the non-league paper this weekend?
Well, you can read all about the NGAs as well. We've got, I think, 7 pages covering the awards. And that's really great for the clubs that are involved in it. The winners, you know, it's something really for them to cherish. I just want to say, actually, very, very quickly, our Lifetime Achievement Award winner, Ray Lewis, become a very popular figure at the paper. He works at the FA. He works on the Leeds Committee. But, of course, he was a long-serving referee, refereeing at the highest level of the game, and took on some of the biggest games in the country. Obviously, sadly, he was a referee who had to take the players off the pitch at 7 minutes past three at Hillsborough 30 years ago. So he's been there. He's been a great supporter of the game at the highest level, but also down in the lower leagues. He's a big Leatherhead fan, and he cares dearly about non-league football. And he's retiring from council at the end of this summer. And we wish him all the best, and we hope that the Lifetime Achievement Award that we gave, and we hope that he holds that close to his heart.
It certainly seemed to bring a big smile to his face. And yeah, the term gentleman of non-league football or gentleman of football is often overused, but I still to find even players that he refereed still to find someone that's got a bad word to say about Ray. So it was a well-deserved award.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's a top guy, and he's been great for us, and there was really no other recipient when we were kind of sitting down and going through it. So good luck to Ray, but congratulations to all our winners. You can catch up on all of that in Sunday's paper, the National Game Awards, massive preview of finals day, and of course the allocations.
We look forward to reading it while we're sat waiting for the game to start at Wembley. Alex, yes, thanks.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and have a great weekend, mate.
Cheers, mate. Bye now.
So it is a big weekend in non-league football, not just for the league allocations announcement, as Alex Neary indicated, but also for non-league finals day. 2 games, 1 ticket, 1 fantastic day at Wembley. In the FA Trophy, Leighton Orient will be looking to bow out of non-league football with a double, having secured the title and promotion to the Football League already. I caught up with the O's boss, Justin Edinburgh, this week at the Non-League Papers National Game Awards. On the National Game Awards, just received Manager of the Year. Let's start with that. How does that feel?
That's an honour. I think, it's been a long, hard season, a very rewarding one, but only done because of a great group of players that have been consistently good throughout the whole season. So, you know, I'm not silly enough. You only win these because of what your team does, and my team have been absolutely magnificent all year.
Yeah, we often talk about on the show about putting your team together to get success. You mentioned about
a blend of young players, senior players, and your backroom staff as well. I mean, that's a backroom staff that most professional clubs would be take their right arm off for.
Yeah, no, we've been lucky, you know, with the young players that have come through and been given the opportunity to have played under the guidance of some incredible senior players, of Joe Bebackenough, Charlie Lee, Matt Harold, Josh Colson, who's won Player of the Year here today. So that's been easy for me to manage, because when you've got them incredible professionals that set the standard and drive the youngsters on, yeah, it's a joy to work with those. So your backroom staff have always there, great support. Incredible work they do behind the scenes. So without them as well, that, you know, we wouldn't have achieved what we've done this season as a football club.
And you can hear all the noise in the background here. It's downtime for most of the people involved in non-league football. Well, I say that they're probably organising pre-season friendlies and getting players in. But yourself, you've got a fairly big game on Sunday at Wembley.
Yeah, we're going the FA Trophy, so the last game of the season, an opportunity to complete the double, and one where we hoping that we can achieve and go out of the season on a real high. Special occasion for me. I think it shows the remarkable turnaround of the football club, because we're going to take over 22,000 fans to there, and it's all about them on the day. But obviously what we want to do is make sure we deliver and try and win the trophy.
And up against AFC Fylde, who had disappointment last weekend, does that make it more difficult, because you guys haven't had a game for a couple of weeks?
It's going to be an interesting one. I mean, you know, we've had some rest time. We've had, you know, we had a friendly last week. We've had good preparation. You know, but Fylde have been competitive in their matches throughout. So it'd be a contrasting approach from both of how we've gone about it. But, you know, for me, it's a cup competition, and it's whoever delivers on the day.
We said this time and time again about Leyton Orient this season. The club came back in turmoil, back into non-league football, but everybody at the club seemed to address it the right way and treated non-league with the respect. You obviously know the non-league game, and you've obviously drilled that into people, but do you think that's helped you gain the success this season?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone's shown the non-league the respect it deserves. I've worked in it for many a years, and it's an incredibly well-run league. It's supported very well. Some incredible young managers and players in it. And I think we showed it the respect it deserved. And I think sometimes when you do that, you get your just rewards. And I think we've done that as a club.
And you're going up now into League Two, maybe beyond that, who knows. You're still going to keep an eye on the non-league game for the quality that's there?
Absolutely. I'd never take my eye off it. It's given me an incredible platform to be a manager. I've had real good times in it. A lot of colleagues, a lot of players that have played under me. So it gets the respect that it deserves off me, and I always look to try and find talent in these lower leagues.
Justin, thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the promotion, and good luck in the trophy final.
Thanks very much.
And as mentioned in that interview with Justin, their opposition will be sore, but perhaps raw and raring to go. It's not often you get to play twice at Wembley in your lifetime, let alone in the space of 8 days. And AFC Fylde manager Dave Challoner is hoping that will be an advantage for his side, still licking the wounds from last week's playoff defeat there to Salford City. So Dave, many a manager in history has a tale of the bitter taste of defeat at Wembley, but few ever have the chance to get back on the horse and play another final back there just a week later. Is that a good thing for you guys?
Yeah, of course it is. I think once you've had disappointment, especially as a footballer, the best thing is to try and get back on the horse as quickly as possible, I suppose. And there's no better potential opportunity and way of doing it is to have another Wembley final with a massive prize at the end of it. So it's really good that it comes round quickly. We've got to use, I suppose, the disappointment and that feeling on Saturday as extra motivation, if you like, to do everything we can to try and win on Sunday.
Yeah, and the playoff, by all accounts, it was a cagey affair for both sides. And another big game, but do you think some of those nerves that maybe hampered some of those performances last week have perhaps now been shaken off, and that everybody hit the ground running as soon as the game starts?
Yeah, you hope so. I think it certainly won't do us any harm. Hopefully it will give us a little bit of an edge. I think it's always difficult. I didn't think the occasion and the environment would affect us. I think potentially in hindsight it did a little bit with some. and we didn't perform. Now, again, that's the easiest thing to, I suppose, look at, in the fact that what we've done all season didn't occur on the biggest stage of all, and we made some really elementary mistakes, and ultimately that's cost us the game. So you'd hope that a week further on, with the experience of what's happened, that that little bit of tension and edge is hopefully taken away. But we're very wary as well. It's another massive game, but one that we're, like I said, really looking forward to.
Yeah, when we spoke to you recently on the show, we spoke about the history of the club. You know, there's some people that are still there from the old days of the formerly named club. What has the atmosphere been like around the club this week? What have you been doing on the back of that playoff defeat to get yourselves geared up for Wembley again?
I think from a club perspective, it's been really, really tough, because we'll have more fans there than we did last week. I think the Wembley experience last weekend was a tough one, because it's a week turnaround, if you like, to get tickets sold and coaches and things like that. So it was really difficult. This one's been a little bit longer in the planning, but I think lots of people have waited till quite late on to get tickets and things. So behind the scenes, it's pretty chaotic. But hopefully, like I said, the day will make all that well worthwhile. Off the pitch, in terms of our preparation as a team, it's really been as normal as possible, in terms of what we were going to do. Obviously, preparing for different opposition, but like I say, a game that we know we're up against. The history was made by one club either way, and we want to try and make sure that's as best as possible. That's us.
Yeah, and obviously opposition in Leighton Orient, they've probably been the side to beat all season. You've got the last chance of everybody in non-league to do that, though. Does that add extra spice to it?
I've not thought about it like that, to be honest. Yeah, before last weekend, we'd hoped that this weekend's game would be a bit of a celebration, with potentially the two promoted sides playing against each other in an FA Trophy final. That's not been the case, but like I said, Sunday for them will be a celebration. They deserve that. They went up meritedly as champions, deserve to be champions. They've got a great team. Justin's done a brilliant job there, and we know that, like I say, we're up against the best team in our league, but we also know that we've done enough over the course of the season, enough respect, know that we can win. Listen, there's extra spice in the fact that it's a big game. I think the fact that it's Leighton Orient's last game doesn't affect it too much. We want to win, like I say, for ourselves more than anything else, and hopefully that'll be the case.
Yeah, well, whatever happens, it's been a great season. Yeah, twice at Wembley, it's just another great stepping stone for the club.
It is. It's been massive. I got asked this earlier in the press around if we don't and we go away without a trophy, would it be a bad season? The season's been brilliant. Like I say, we sort of, I suppose, dared to dream probably three or four weeks ago when we said, oh, we essentially have four or five games and our last two games could be at Wembley Stadium. That's proven to be the case. We obviously want to win and we want to try and go out on a high, but by no means will it be the end of the earth, be all end all, if we don't win on Sunday. It's been, a fantastic for the players. We've certainly progressed on last season. Regardless of what happens, what we've got to make sure, even looking beyond Sunday, is that there's certainly no hangover from us in terms of the start of next season. And we've already started to look at that, not certainly not taking our eye off the game, but we want to make sure that we're in with a shot of having another go next year. And that we really see this, as we did midway through the season, really, as a bonus game for us to go and try and win a great trophy.
Yeah, and to win a great trophy, Kirkham and Wesham having already won the FA Vase, is that something that the people are talking about at the club?
Yeah, of course it is. I think the first club in history to do that. I think it's quite poignant in that where we've come from, if you like, as an amateur side, and our last game as an amateur side, if you like, was winning that FA Trophy. We obviously then the name was changed to AFC Fylde, and we've now got an opportunity, like I say, to win the highest level of non-league cup, if you like, in the FA Trophy. So now it's people realise what we've done. It's been a great journey, one that has been on an uphill gradient all the way. Hopefully that'll continue, and Sunday could be a big part of that.
Yeah, a great journey. We'd still have a final chapter to finish this season as well. Dave Callan, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show again, and good luck at the weekend.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Tim.
So that's the FA Trophy, which promises to be a cracking cup tie. But before all that, and a 12:15 p.m. kickoff at Wembley on Sunday. It's the FA Vars final. Two clubs who have won their respective league titles at Step 5 and promotion already this season, but both with some experienced players in their ranks and some big games behind them. As Kevin Watson, manager at Cray Valley Paper Mills, pointed out to me earlier, this is a big game, whatever your experience. Kevin, when we last spoke to you, Wembley was a dream you didn't really want to talk about. We're chatting on Thursday night before Sunday's game. Does the realness set in yet?
Not quite yet. I think we went to Wembley on Tuesday. Most of the squad went down. Some chose not to go. Others were busy at work. And those that chose not to go, I completely respect that decision. But the majority of us went, playing staff and management staff. And that started, I suppose, to dawn upon us that that we will be there Sunday and involved in a big game there. But I still don't think it's really hit home and possibly won't until there'll be a lot of emotion on the day, etc. And possibly it will be after the event, I imagine, when we reflect and sort of take in the achievement and the occasion.
Yeah, I always say this to people, having been involved in big matches, not like you guys, not walking out on the Wembley turf or anything like that, but you're involved in Wembley turf, you just make sure you take 30 seconds or something, just stop, just look around and absorb it, because they're the sort of memories you can't write. You may only get those once in a lifetime, and you've got to enjoy that game, and I guess you're going to be saying the same to your players.
Absolutely. I think you're right. Take that moment to take it in, and that memory will be there forever. The one that everybody says is make sure the players enjoy it, which is easier said than done. Certainly myself as a player, when you're playing big games, there's lots of anxiety and things like that, so it's not that easy just to enjoy it. There's a lot at stake. There always feels like there's a lot at stake. You want to perform, but it's just about channeling those emotions and that sort of positive energy to allow you to perform better, really, personally and collectively as a team.
Yeah, and I think we spoke about it before, you your own experience. You've got plenty of experience amongst your players as well, and have they been talking about, trying to spread that word amongst the other people in the squad that maybe haven't got that same big match experience behind them?
I've been asked that question quite a few times. Not really, and we don't put that expectation on them, really. Obviously, you're referring to the likes of Kevin Nisby. But it's my job as
well. I also remember as a young lad, Gavin Tomlin turning out for my side, the Yedding as well. Plenty of game experience, and that's the sort of thing that, maybe if the game gets tricky, I'm sure it will be tricky at many points throughout the game, but that they're the players that you might come to rely on a bit heavier.
Yeah, that's kind of been their role since they've joined the club, though. Like that happens in league games, that happens throughout. I wouldn't expect necessarily any more from them. They need to concentrate on their own performance as individuals, really, as much as anything else. And it's our job as a management team, first and foremost, to allow them to do it with regards to managing the other players. Yes, obviously the players look round and they see the likes of Kevin Nisby sitting next to him in the dressing room and realise that there's a player there that's achieved a lot in the game and that breeds a certain amount of confidence. But equally so, they look across the dressing room at somebody else who hasn't had those opportunities and necessarily been a professional footballer, but because they've played the whole season with them, they've got the confidence in their own teammates, and again, that breeds confidence. So they've all got their own stories in life and in football, but it's nice that those stories can come together collectively for them to sort of achieve this together.
Yeah, so you've had your Wembley trip, you're training tonight. What about other preparation? You've got a Sunday lunchtime start. How does that fit in?
Well, last week we played an in-house game at Dartford, so it's a nice facility at Dartford, and we picked a team to play against, individuals to play against, based on what we knew about the opposition. And it was a good calibre of team that we played against in terms of the opposition, and we purposely played that game at sort of 12 o'clock. So it was a similar sort of kick-off time, just so people get their body clock sort of used to it. But we will travel up on the Saturday to the hotel, be at the hotel in time to watch the FA Cup together at the hotel, have a team meeting, have dinner together. It's quite nice because we already experienced that in the quarterfinals against Wigan Rovers, so it's not so unfamiliar staying overnight as a team. And then we'll get up, have breakfast, travel there together. The hotel's only about 7 or 8 miles away, so not far. And then start the preparations there and then at the stadium.
That's not FA Cup weekend. You know, I remember growing up, FA Cup, you'd watch the teams in the morning preparing at the hotel, moving along. And I guess, you know, probably there's players in your side that don't even remember that. So it's an element of traditional football, but maybe traditions that those players don't know about, but they should embrace and enjoy.
Oh, absolutely. They need to enjoy it. It'll be nice to watch the FA Cup on a Saturday at the hotel and with the thought process that sort of less than 24 hours later, that will be us playing on that pitch, you know.
You're going to be paying attention to make sure the divots get put back in.
Exactly. On Tuesday, the pitch is nothing short of phenomenal, perfect to a certain extent. It's incredible. It's funny, I work in a school and we do some trips with the students, and one of them's to a football stadium, whether it be the Emirates or somewhere like that. But people can pay to have a tour of the stadium, but they can't actually pay to get on the pitch.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity to actually go on the pitch, you know.
Yeah, and whatever happens, you've had a great season, a title, promotion, Step 4 football next season. A great chapter for the club and more to come next term.
Yeah, that's the legacy, really. And that's what's great about promotion. And when I've been saying that's our priority and that's more important than the FA Vars, and I think some people struggle to believe you when you say that, but the longevity in it is that we'll end up in with promotion in the league above. Now, if we hadn't got promotion, even if we had done well in the FA Vars and got to the final or anything like that, that then becomes just a memory, you know, and it's kind of in the past. It's an important memory and it play a big part in people's lives, absolutely. But in terms of moving forward, promotion's important. You know, these players want to play at the next level and they should be playing at the next level, and the club is in the right place to be at the next level.
Well, Garen, thanks for joining us again on the Non-League Football Show. Enjoy your weekend and good luck in the final.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thank you.
So there's one more manager to speak to ahead of Sunday's final, and I couldn't leave out our very own Dave Anderson, manager at Chertsey Town. So Dave, we've given you the week off the show so as not to show favouritism over Kevin, but I'm sure you're going to have a handshake with him pre-game, a beer or two post-game, but I understand you've been taking advantage of a backstage tour at Wembley this evening.
Yeah. We organised sort of going there this evening. I know Kevin took his guys there Tuesday, and I think, you know, he'll agree with us that it's just to take the shock out of it, Tim. You know, Wembley, I have to say, were really accommodating and were as good as gold. And we got to get on the pitch, which I didn't think we would. We didn't get to play football on it, but we got to walk on it. And to walk on the pitch is totally different than to watch it, to sit in the stadium. And me and you have sat everywhere in that stadium. But when you go on the pitch, it seems a lot closer and smaller than you think it is, you know. It's a big pitch, but it's good to walk on it. The guys enjoyed getting the feel of what it was about, and you're trying to do the right thing, and I certainly felt like we were doing the right thing by being there, you know.
And you've mentioned it there, and we joked about it this season, that this one's going to tick the final box of appearing on all parts of the ground at Wembley for the finals. And I was thinking, on your visits as a journalist and as a fancy guest in the past, have you ever thought what might be going through the heads pre-game for those managers that are out there?
Well, we have, because if you remember, we were there when our dear friend Willie Wordsworth was there with my friend Jimmy Quinn, with Cage, I think it was. We watched them in a playoff final, and we've watched many of a Vase game and trophy game and playoff game, covering it with the show. And it, you're always intrigued to what people are going through and what it would be like to sit in the hot seat, I suppose, in the stadium. So, and I've spoke to a lot of people about that. I think that's wise as well, is that, you know, people who have been down that road, done it, I've spoke to them about how is it, what did you learn from it, you know, and everybody has a little slant on it. And when you speak to four or five people, it has been really worthwhile, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned the hot seat, depending on what the weather's like, because it's quite an exposed dugout there, isn't it? Certainly people can see your every move there. Have you thought about that?
I've thought about lots of things. I'm definitely going to change out of my suit and back into my dugout gear, because, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable in a suit, you know what I'm like. I quite like to sit and watch the game. But every manager you see at Wembley stands out. It's quite a distance from the dugout to the edge of the pitch. So I'm not really sure what I'll do on the day. I know I'll definitely take my suit off, and then I'll see where I feel most comfortable. And if I feel comfortable sitting down, I'll sit down.
And Sunday, just before noon, you're going to lead your players out at Wembley. Have you got in mind what that last thing you're going to say to the players? Do you know what the sort of thing you're going to say to them? Or is that just going to come naturally to you at the final moment?
No, I have an idea of a sort of structure in my head as to what I'm going to say at any particular time, be it in the hotel at the pre-match, be it the night before, be it in the last sort of throws when the bell goes. In my mind, of an idea of what it's going to be, but I think you'd be foolish to try and think you can do it all off the cuff. But I will chop and change that as to how I feel at the time of what's required, you know. I don't think you need to motivate people for this. I think you need to really calm them down, nearly more than wind them up. But I think you get a feel on the day as to what's required, and then your gut takes over. And I've always found the size of my gut, it's always a good idea to go with it, you know.
And it's quite a build up, because you know. Your season finished, you won the title, and then there's a small game. We'll speak to Phil Annetts later on in the show about the FA Cup final on Saturday, and then you're playing Sunday morning, and you're all getting together in the hotel and that sort of thing. How's that going to work? You're all going to sit down and watch the FA Cup final on Saturday evening?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. We're going to train Saturday morning at Brentford, and then we're going to the hotel. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to go in, get some tea and toast, watch the FA Cup final, I think in a private room, if I'm not mistaken. Then we'll go into our routine that we've developed going away from home up north for the three games. So the lads are used to it. They understand what it is, and it gets them in something they're comfortable with, and they know what's coming. They know we're going to eat. They know what we're going to do after it. They know the only difference will be that, obviously, there won't be a breakfast. There'll just be a pre-match, and we'll go a little bit earlier. So, yeah, we've more or less sorted out exactly what we want to do and how we want to do it. You know, listen, all the preparation in the world, and you know, Kevin will know this, and every non-league manager will know. I've turned up at games when the coach is late, and when we've 15 minutes to get our team out on the pitch, announce it, get them out there, and try and get them warmed up and play, and it's the worst preparation in the world. And we've played like Brazil. I've also taken teams and had the hotel and did everything by the book and been there at the right time and did the right warm-up, and we've played like Botswana. So you try and do the right thing, but you can never guarantee what happens when you get there.
And obviously, whatever the result, it's going to be a fantastic day out for everybody involved. But then there's another big game afterwards with the lads that you've spoken to, Dave Challoner, Justin Edinburgh. What are the plans, you know, or is it just suck it and see how the day turns out?
Well, I think, you know, hopefully I'll get to see the guys, and especially Justin Edinburgh, for a while, and just say hello and how are you. That, you know, my stress will be over, whether I'm in a good mood or a bad mood. Well, listen, whatever the result is, I've made my mind up. I'm going to celebrate it. But it'd be good to see the guys. But they'll be in pre-match mode, which is a whole different ballgame. So our plan is to sort of get into the lounge that they've allocated us as a players' lounge and have some food and a few drinks, and then go back to Chertsey and celebrate what's been a brilliant season. You know, we take the vase away, it's brilliant. And if we don't, we've still... It's the first time they've won a league in their history, a senior league in the history of the club. So we're certainly going to celebrate that. The funny thing is, it's quicker for me to get to Wembley than to get to Chertsey.
Well, who knows? Maybe Wembley will become your home ground for the future. Dave, fantastic always talking to you. I wish you a memorable weekend, and hopefully I'll catch up with you after the game on Sunday.
Okay, Tim. Yeah, thank you very much, mate. Thanks.
So a cracking couple of games at Wembley on Sunday, the FA Vase and FA Trophy final on non-league finals day. We'll be there to get the thoughts and views of various people at the game, including the winning managers and possibly the losing ones too. So a Wembley final, that's a massive achievement for anybody in non-league. Are there many other opportunities that are better? Well, our next guest may be about to top even that. Just over a month's time, he's going to be leading his nation out in the opening game of the CONCACAF Gold Cup to take on host nation, the USA. Welcome back to the show, former Histon, Torquay United, Barnet, Hayes and Yedding United, Boreham Wood, Wealdstone and Hampton and Richmond Borough player Sam Cox.
How you doing, Tim? You okay, mate?
It's always a pleasure to speak to you, Sam. Now, host nation, the opening game of the competition, Guyana's first ever major competition qualification like this. Yeah. You get to wear the armband and then lead them out. Now, I'm lucky to have known you about your passion, your emotion for football, and whatever jersey you wear. I mean, that's spine-tingling stuff, isn't it?
To be fair, mate, it's still sinking in, the reality of what we've actually achieved. And to be fair, I don't think it will actually sink in for years to come. What we've gone and achieved and, you know, qualified for our first major tournament is beyond all expectations. I mean, I think we were ranked 182nd in the FIFA World Rankings. And, you know, to qualify for a major tournament with the squad that we've had, you know, it's a credit to them and it's a credit to the management staff to where we've got to. So, you know, I'm buzzing for it. I can't wait. And, you know, it's an opportunity that I won't take lightly, and I'll grab it with both hands.
Yeah, and you mentioned the management team. A massive achievement by all involved in Guyana football. I remember manager Michael Johnson saying that when he was appointed, his aim was to reach a major tournament. And, how many managers have said that? It seemed an unrealistic dream. She said, the FIFA ranking at the time. But, I have to say, I probably mentioned to you as well at the time, but I believed him. There was something about it. And I guess you guys all do too. What's that magic formula?
I think it's been coming for a long time, Tim. And, you know, we've got a great group of lads, and it's a huge credit to them. And the team spirit that we have within the camp, not only with, you know, the boys that are coming from overseas, but the local-based boys who are actually living in Guyana. And it's actually quite a good dynamic which has come together and really worked well. It's been a work in progress. It hasn't happened overnight, and you know, I've been in the program now for the past 5 years, so I've seen the best and the worst of the program. Some of the things that I've seen, and gone through, people would have no idea. So it's been quite a journey for me to witness. But like I said, I think that the group of lads that we've got and the formula coming together has been fantastic. It's a good blend between the old guard and some really talented youngsters coming through. So I think that's what's got us through. And again, you add the staff, Michael Johnson, who's done a great job to get us to where we are. It's a really good formula. So, you know, it's just moving on to the next step now and looking forward to that Gold Cup.
Yeah, you mentioned that blend. And from afar, that's certainly something that stands out. We say there's some lads that are playing locally. There's plenty of non-league sort of vigour and sort of people that have learnt their game at non-league level. But people that are playing all around the world as well, aren't they? And it's sort of really bringing a united team together.
Exactly, and that's what it is. And, you know, as you said there, there's quite a few non-league boys now involved in the squad, which is brilliant, really, because I think Caribbean football, a lot of it is down to, you know, it's determination, it's work rate, it's endeavour, it's all those kind of ingredients that a lot of those non-league boys have and have had to have and to survive within the National League. So, you know, they're all talented boys, and a lot of them have great potential to go and play in the league, and some should be playing in the Football League. But like you said, there's players coming from the MLS. There's players that have played in the Premier League. We've got Callum Harriott, who plays in the Championship. And obviously the group of non-league boys that we've got, and of course, mixed with the local base, it's a really good blend, and one that from the outside probably doesn't look like it would work. But when we've all come together, you know, we've done a fantastic job.
Yeah, and you've already you touched upon that journey. Now, I've obviously followed your journey. Yeah, you've had a training camp in Brazil. I mean, that's got to be a highlight. But you're going to go to the Gold Cup. But I remember when we last had you on the non-league football show, I think it was, you had a fallout with your club at Boreham Wood at the time over refusing to turn down a call for international duty. But I remember the team on the show at the time being very supportive of you taking that. Yeah, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it certainly seems to have paid off. But did you ever expect the journey to be as great as it has been?
To be fair, Tim, I always had an inkling that we was on the cusp of something special. And when I joined the program back in 2015, I didn't just want to join the program to be a number. I didn't just want to join the program to see it where it was and to for it not to progress. I wanted to ensure that by the time I'd retired from football internationally, domestically, I wanted to leave Guyanese football in a better place. So I always knew that I wanted to achieve something special. So I had it in the back of my head all the time. Some people probably thought I was crazy by, you know, going away on international duty when Bourne Wood gave me the ultimatum whether to go or stay. And it was a real terrible time for me, to be fair. Probably the darkest time in football that I've gone through. But, you know, I always had that in the back of my head that I had a dream and I wanted to achieve something with the national team. And for me, it's paid off. Now, it's not the end by any means stretch. It's just the start. And, you know, to qualify for our first major tournament, it shows that decision probably has paid off. But, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. You know, we're not finished yet. I'm not finished yet. And, you know, I just want to see us get to our highest ranking possible and, you know, take the program to the next level, really, mate.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're saying you're not finished. I mean, those legs are still young, but obviously you've got some summer distractions. You're on loan at Hampton last season from Wealdstone. Yeah. Obviously, managerial changes at Stones in recent weeks. What are your plans club-wise for next season?
Well, I've currently just seen the end of my Wealdstone contract. That expires at the end of the month. And, you know, I've had the question posed to me a few times, and a couple of clubs have contacted me, three or four clubs have contacted me this week, actually. And, you know, I've just told them, really, I don't really want to make a decision until I've got this, the Gold Cup out of the way, because, like I said, it's in front of 40 million people over in the United States. So, you know, you never know. If you have a good tournament over there, the possibilities could be endless. So, you know, I'm not cutting my ties yet. I'm not making a decision, just yet, but you know, I will do in due course. And you know, if an offer does come up, maybe overseas, then that would be something I'd consider. But for now, you know, I'm just really putting my focus on achieving something special in this Gold Cup and putting my energy and focus into that. And when I get back, I'll assess the situation and go from there, mate.
Yeah, and for those that don't know you, I mean, you've got a great job in football anyway at the Tottenham Hotspur Academy. But I mean, how does playing as a semi-pro footballer, you know, international commitments as well, work alongside working in a modern-day Premier League academy? I mean, that's a tough old juggle.
Yeah, it is really tough. And especially when I first dropped into non-league and having to adapt, getting another job, going down the coaching route, doing my badges, it was really difficult. And there were times where I was exhausted, trying to balance the three and, you know, earn a good living and carry on playing and trying to, you know, give my best performances on a match day. It was really tough. But I think as I've matured and got older, I've learned how to deal with that and how to balance my lifestyle better. Tottenham have been absolutely fantastic for me, and you know, I really owe a lot to them. You know, not only for bringing me back to the club after being a former player, but just the way their understanding of my situation, they're really encouraging that I go and play my international football and domestic, and you know, when I need to get cover, they're there straight away to get cover for me. So Tottenham have been absolutely brilliant, and you know, it's really a place that I call home, and you know, I'm just looking forward, you know, to helping the academy and the younger players, you know, progress through. So you know, it's I'm really fortunate.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, as a player now, you've got three, you know, hopefully three international championship games ahead against the USA, against Panama, against Trinidad and Tobago. You know, Group D is probably the toughest of all the groups in the tournament. But as a player and as a coach, that's experience that surely you're going to lap up and be able to pass on to future kids as well.
Yeah, that's it, mate. And you know, I just take everything in my stride. And you know, like I said, I've been very fortunate and very grateful to have had my upbringing at Tottenham's academy and progressing through as a professional player, but to have these experiences playing abroad, playing internationally, you know, I've just come back from Tokyo with the under 14s at Tottenham. It's invaluable experience that, you know, I'm going to take and hopefully make myself a better coach and a better person.
Yeah, if anybody doesn't follow Sam on Instagram or social media, I've told him before. Sometimes he makes me feel sick, but he makes me feel very proud as well. That you know, I've watched him develop as a player and as a young man. But before all this international tournament malarkey, I believe you're involved in a big game this Sunday too. Not the FA Trophy or Vars final, but it's a charity game at Bishop Stortford, organised by former manager there and an old friend of the show, Gordon Boateng. A pro celebrity game in aid of mental health charities. I think gates open at 12:30 for a 2 p.m. kickoff. Various information on Twitter at @football_health, I believe. Putting the boots on then, Sam, for that one?
Yeah, well, Gordon asked me a while ago now. I've actually got two charity games over the weekend. One is for cancer research on the Saturday. That's over in Norwich. And obviously, Gordon set up this game on Sunday, which I'm very much looking forward to. He asked me if I'd like to take part in it. And, you know, anything I can do to help raise awareness for mental health or any charity work, I'm always up for it and in helping out. And it's actually one that's quite close to me because, you know, I've had a few of my friends that have come out in recent months and years that have expressed their and made aware people of their mental health. And you know, it's an issue that's occurring quite a bit in football, and it's brilliant that people are now starting to talk about it. Men are now starting to come out and you know, share their stories. But you know, it's an issue that goes on, you know, every day for players up and down the leagues, from non-league to the Premier League. And, you know, it's an issue that needs to be raised and made more aware. So, you know, like I said, if going down on Sunday helps raise awareness, you know, I'm proud to be part of that. And, you know, Gordon's done a fantastic job getting the caliber of players together and the celebrity. So, you know, we're looking for a fun day out and ultimately raise awareness for mental health, which is the main goal.
Well, good stuff. And I suppose I better let you go because you're one of the busiest men in football. But you know, obviously, massive games coming up. But there's one question that I've been asked countless times already this week, and you're the man with the connection. So can you get me a Spurs ticket for the Champions League final?
I tell you what, I must have had it. 50 plus people ask me, can I get a ticket? You know, it's even tough for our staff members.
I can imagine, mate. There are some. I'm not saying you're not a Spurs legend. I know you were a Spurs legend in that academy reserve setup. And but there's some Spurs legends that I know are still struggling to get tickets. So I'm just enjoying the moment as a Spurs fan that you know that we've got to the final. And
it's phenomenal. It's really good stuff. Like it's things of dreams. Really, if you said this to me, you know, 10 years ago when I was a player at the club, that we were going to be in a Champions League final in 2019. Like, it just doesn't seem real. So the boys have done fantastically well and the gaffer's done an unbelievable job. So, you know, I think there's one more big push and, you know, it could be a reality. So it's fantastic.
Well, what a summer ahead, Mr. Cox.
What's that?
What a summer ahead you've got for you.
Oh, darn, it's been, even so far, I got back from Barcelona on Tuesday. And then I was in Tokyo the week before, and then going to be going out to Madrid, and then off to Bermuda with the national team. We've got Bermuda away, and then we've got Costa Rica before we go out to the States. So, you know, busy, busy summer, but you know what? This is what we live for, so I can't wait.
And I know how hard you work for it as well. Sam Cox, thank you once again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and best of luck with everything at Guyana.
Thank you, mate.
Now, I couldn't let this weekend go, of course, without mention of the FA Cup. A small cup final taking place at Wembley the day before non-league finals day. Non-league involvement, of course, long since dispatched, but only on the field, as our next guest will reveal. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Phil Annetts at FA Cup Backfire. Welcome, Phil.
Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I guess this is the culmination of your season's work, isn't it, this weekend?
It is, yeah. It's a fantastic FA Cup final after 8 months or so of FA Cup action since August, and culminating in representation in the FA Cup final programme, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and that little matter of the FA Cup final this Saturday, and I'm pleased to hear that you're keeping the non-league flag flying.
Well, this is what I was really keen to do in the programme, and of course there'll be lots of coverage of Man City and Watford, but I wanted to use tonight's my pages for all of the stats that had gone on throughout the competition since August, all of the ones that maybe we've covered in our conversations in the past, all the way back from the extra Premier round onwards.
Now there's already been much debate this week about embargoed stuff and these league allocations, who's allowed to see them, who's not. I'm not. And any chance that you can let us into the secrets of some of the stats that we should remember this FA Cup competition for?
Well, seeing as that you can buy the programme already in major high retail stores, then I don't see why not. One of my earliest and favourite ones was about the famous namesake of Liam Brady at Arundel, if you remember.
Dave Anderson's side, Chertsey Town.
Yeah, that's right, playing against Chertsey Town, who were well beaten 4-1 on the day. And one of the goal scorers was Liam Brady, who at 16... and three quarters, probably, was the first player to score in the FA Cup who was born in the 21st century. So that was quite a great feat that's been printed in the FA Cup final programme.
And a fairly famous name in FA Cup circles as well.
Very much so, yes. That's quite a nice coincidence. But it was great to meet him. I went down to Arundel in the next round and met him as well. And he was a fantastic guy. So well done to him. A record that can't be taken away.
Indeed. And I guess, you know, are you able to get to the cup final this weekend?
No, I'm not going to the cup final. I only really go if it's my beloved Leeds United, but seems they don't even get to win.
Yeah, we won't talk about that. Yeah, that. Yeah, I was with another Leeds United fan earlier today. Yeah, it was a difficult conversation, I have to say. But in terms of the FA Cup, you know, obviously Man City fans, Watford fans, all their thoughts are on Saturday's game. But yeah, many in non-league are already looking at the start of next year's competition, which will start in August. Any word on how the competition is going to be structured next season?
I don't expect it to be any different from this year in terms of the number of entries. The new Step 6 leagues that are set up, or Step 5 leagues, might change the number of clubs that have to enter in the extra Premier round from Step 4. Interestingly, this year there was entry from Step 4 in the extra Premier round, and unfortunately for Widnes, they were knocked out in the extra Premier round and became the first Northern Premier League side ever to be knocked out so early in the FA Cup. So
that's maybe not one that they'll be sticking up on their honours board in the clubhouse, that no. one. But that's the sort of stats that we love from you, though, Phil. And you mentioned that extra preliminary round. I think we start again, 10th of August? Does that mean plenty of research for you between now and the 10th of August so that you're already guns blazing for the new season? I mean, that first extra preliminary round, probably the busiest week of your life, that one, isn't it?
It is extremely busy. The benefit I get is that I get a few weeks' notice of the draw in the teams. The actual busiest weekend is the preliminary round one, because there's hardly any time between the two rounds and there's almost as many matches going on. So for those 4 weeks, or from the middle of July to the middle of August, absolutely manic. Yeah, very difficult to stay on top of it all. So and, fingers crossed, I will be able to.
Well, we hope to have you back on the show to tell us all about it. And obviously, you know, if ever I get to go on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, sitting alongside Jeremy Clarkson as it is now, and the question comes up on the FA Cup, are you still the man that I should be phoning up on FA Cup trivia?
I'm definitely the man if I've got my facts in front of me. It's not all in my head, unfortunately, so I wouldn't be much use to you if I was in the audience.
Yeah, see proof to all you students out there listening, you have to be prepared. That's what it's all about, you know. GCSE time, A-level time, yeah. Get your research done beforehand, and it makes your job so much easier. Well, Phil, it's been fantastic having you back on the Non-League Football Show. And, I mean, it'll only be a matter of weeks before we're talking again anyway. But until then, enjoy your summer, and thanks for all your help throughout the season.
No, it's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed working with you guys on the non-league show and sharing all the facts and stats about the competition with all the non-league clubs from August all the way through till they carry on into January, February. So thanks again.
And that's it for this week. A big thank you, as ever, to all of our guests, and a big thank you to all for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season, share the show, and join in the debate throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson's at DaveAnderson78, and myself at Tim Fuel on Twitter. And of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, also on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Deezer, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and of course, all good podcast aggregation sites. Good luck to all of those involved in Non-League Finals Day this Sunday, and for all those possibly affected by the league allocations announcements. Thank you, and goodbye.
Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.